Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is September 21st, 2016, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Sternal Fractures. Break on through to the other side. Delayed complications and functional outcomes. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Chris Bond. Chris is an emergency physician and clinical lecturer at the University of Calgary. He is currently the host of CapeCast, which highlights education innovation from emergency medicine residency programs across Canada. Chris also has his own FOMED blog called Sock Mob, Standing on the Corner, Minding My Own Business. Welcome back to the SGEM, Chris.
Thanks very much, Ken. Always a pleasure.
Well, we are starting off season number 5 with back-to-back SGEM Hop episodes. In the last SGEM episode, we had Dr. Rick Boddy discussing his recent paper on high-sensitivity troponin published in AEM. Are you using high-sensitivity troponin out there in Calgary?
We are using the high-sensitivity troponin here in Cowtown.
And how are you finding it?
Actually, I love it. I think it's a great test. There's a lot of people who have difficulties with it, but I think we've worked out a lot of the kinks, and I really like it.
Great. So this week, we have a new publication from the Canadian Journal of Emergency Medicine that's hot off the press, and it's about sternal fractures. Can you give us a case?
All right. So a 49-year-old male presents to the emergency department after being in a motor vehicle collision. You diagnose him with an isolated sternal fracture on X-ray. Specifically, there are no rib fractures or lung abnormalities identified. He also has a normal ECG and troponin. As you are preparing to discharge him, he asks if there are any potential complications to expect from the injury and how long he should expect to have pain.
Well, to give us some background and discuss his paper, we have invited the lead author, Dr. Samuel Racine, to join us. Welcome to the SGEM, Samuel.
Thank you, Ken. Thanks for having me. It's a privilege to be here.
Well, Samuel is a senior resident in the EM program at the University Laval in Quebec City. And he has Dr. Marcel Aymon, an associate professor from Laval University, who's the senior author on the paper, here to help us through some of the nerdy sections. Welcome, Marcel.
Hi, Ken and Chris. Happy to be there and hop with you.
Well, why don't you two guys, you guys wrote the paper, why don't you give us some background information on sternal fractures?
Yes, of course. Sternal fractures are often the result of a significant blunt thoracic trauma and have an incidence between 0.33% of all trauma patients and 3.7% of patients admitted after a motor vehicle accident. Poor outcomes in patients with sternal fracture are associated with the severity of others' injuries, complication, and pre-existing comorbidities. Many studies have demonstrated that patients with isolated fracture of the sternum can be safely discharged after emergency department after an appropriate investigation, which should include, according to ACE guidelines, cardiac biomarkers and ECG.
Interestingly, Chris and Ken, maybe Chris, you're a bit young to know that, but years ago there was a myth of the sternal fracture where we used to keep those patients over in the emerge for a longer stay and monitoring. And now we're discharging them more easily. And in the past years, some of the minor thoracic injuries publication showed that there is a delayed hemothorax that's been reported in some of those patients and a risk for poor functional outcome. So we wonder what happened with that sternal fracture myth years ago. Is this something that now happens at home when we're discharging the patient?
So, Chris, can you give us the clinical question we're going to try to answer?
I can do that for you. So, what are the complications and outcomes of patients with isolated sternal fracture discharged from the emergency department compared to those with other minor thoracic injury?
And Samuel, can you give the title of your reference and maybe talk about some of your co-authors that were on the paper with you?
Yes. So the reference is Racine and Al, Delayed Complication and Functional Outcomes of Isolated Sternal Fracture After Emergency Department Discharge, a prospective multicenter cohort study. It was published in CJAM in 2016. I was the lead author and the senior author, and my supervisor was Dr. Marcel Aymon, along with other co-authors in four centers for hospital in the Quebec province.
So what we'll do now is run through the PICO, the population, intervention, comparison, and outcome. What was the population you were dealing with, Samuel?
Patient 16 years and older who present to the emergency department with minor thoracic trauma defined by either the presence of chest abrasion or contusion or suspected or radiographically confirmed rib fracture.
And you excluded any patients with a hemothorax, pneumothorax, lung contusion, or any other significant head, chest, abdominal, or extremity injury on their initial ED visit. You also excluded patients where follow-up was not possible or there was a delay greater than 3 days between the injury and the emergency department visit.
So what was the intervention there, Samuel?
It was patient with isolated sternal fracture.
And what did you compare it to?
Those with a rib fracture or no fracture.
And then talk to me about your outcomes.
Our primary outcomes was delayed hemothorax,
which was determined by a chest x-ray read by a blinded radiologist.
And functional outcomes at 30 and 90 days.
And this was assessed using a validated instrument called the Medical Outcome Short Form Health Survey, the SF-12.
So give us your conclusions.
So in this prospective study, we found that 12.5% of patients with sternal fracture develop a delayed hemothorax, but the clinical significance of this remained questionable. The proportion of patients with sternal fracture who had moderate to severe disability was significantly higher than that of patients with other minor thoracic trauma.
So Chris, let's go through that quality checklist for observational studies. The first question, did the study address a clearly focused issue?
It did.
And did the study authors use an appropriate method to answer their question?
I'd say unsure. They assumed that any effusion seen on chest x-ray in the follow-up period was hemothorax. This seems like a safe assumption, but there's no way of knowing 100% without drainage or a CT scan. In the real world, though, the answer is probably yes.
Question 3. Was the cohort recruited in an acceptable way?
Yes, they were.
Was the exposure accurately measured to minimize bias?
Yes.
How about the outcome? Was it accurately measured to minimize bias?
It was. They had a blinded radiologist reading the follow-up chest x-rays and used a validated scale to address the functional outcome.
Do you think the authors identified all important confounding factors?
No. One major confounding factor is the actual accuracy of diagnosing isolated sternal fractures based on plain films alone, especially given the poor sensitivity of chest x-ray for rib fractures. We don't know if some people received chest CT scans while others received only plain films, and this could result in inaccurate group assignment.
Was the follow-up of subjects complete enough?
For delayed hemothorax, it was. They had good follow-up at 2 weeks. However, the 90-day follow-up for functional disability was only 70%.
Question 8. How precise is the estimate of risk?
The estimate of risk has its precision reduced because of the small group size. There were 32 patients with isolated sternal fractures, and only 4 developed a delayed hemothorax.
So, Chris, do you believe the results?
I do for delayed hemothorax, and for the functional outcome, I'm unsure.
All right. Can the results be applied to the local population?
I'm also unsure about this because it will depend on your local population.
But the final question, question 11 for observational studies, do the results of this study fit with other available evidence?
Yes, they do.
Well, let's go through their key results. They screened almost 3,000 patients with 969 included in the study. The mean age was about 50 years of age, with 63% being male. Now, there were some differences between the groups: age, gender, mechanism of injury, and pre-existing airway disease.
Yeah, out of the 969 patients, 3.3% or 32 patients had an isolated sternal fracture. About 30% had rib fracture, and 65% had no fracture.
MVC was the most common cause of sternal fractures, about 3/4 of the time, while a fall from a patient's own height was the number one reason for rib fractures, about just over a third of the time.
The primary outcome was delayed hemothorax within 14 days, which in out of the total sample was seen in 112 of 969 patients, so about 12%. In the sternal fracture group, it was 12.5%, 4 out of 32 patients.
And if you just looked at the group that had rib fractures, about 23% of those had the primary outcome of a delayed hemothorax, where if you had no fracture, it was 38 out of 633, or about 6%.
Notably, none of the four patients with delayed hemothorax in the isolated sternal fractures group required drainage, while three cases in the rib fractures group did require drainage.
There were no major complications, and no mortality was observed at 90 days.
With regards to the other primary outcome, the functional outcome, isolated sternal fracture had more significant disability at 30 and 90 days as rated on the SF-12 outcome form.
So now it's time to talk a little nerdy to me. I want to congratulate Samuel and his team for getting the first prospective study published on this issue.
Thank you, Ken and Chris. As you said, it was a teamwork. I had a lot of support from the other co-authors, and we are very proud of the final result.
Sam, what got you interested in studying patients with isolated sternal fractures who were discharged from the ED?
I have a big interest for trauma, and it all started at the beginning of my residency when Dr. Marcel Lemon, one of the co-authors and my supervisor for the study, told me about data on thoracic trauma that he and his research collaborators have just finished collecting. He was looking for someone to study the outcome of sternal fracture because this injury is not well understood when it's isolated. Even if the literature says we can safely discharge these patients from ED, many clinicians still fear this injury because it has long been associated with bad outcome or severe trauma, just as Marcel said. And we were wondering if once discharged from ED, patient with sternal fracture evolved like other myothoracic trauma. And that's where everything started.
Well, Samuel, now we're going to ask you five questions about your study to better understand and interpret the results. However, we are not going to ask you on why you had two primary outcomes, because Chris and I, we know that you know that there can only be one primary outcome. So you ready for the five questions?
Yes, I am. Absolutely.
All right, here we go. We're going to talk about groups. And the first question is about differences between the groups. And there were differences between the groups at baseline. And I mentioned that earlier with age, gender, mechanism of injury. What impact, if any, do you think that this could have had on your results?
Well, age and gender differences could have influenced the functional outcome. That's why our statistical analysis for these results were normalized for age and sex. When looking at delayed hemothoraces, one of our collaborators found in another study that age was not a significant risk factor for this type of complication. The difference regarding the mechanism of injury was expected. It's well reported in the literature that the main mechanism of injury is fall for rib fracture and motor vehicle crash for sternal fracture. The effect of this difference is, to our knowledge, minimal on the result when talking about isolated thoracic injuries.
With regards to group assignment, chest x-rays are only about 50% sensitive for rib fractures. How do you know that those with sternal fractures did not have rib fractures and those called negative for any fractures did not have a rib fracture?
That's a very good question, Chris. In an ideal situation, every patient would have get a CT scan as a gold standard investigation. But it was not possible in the current design of this study, which was a pragmatic design that tend to reflect the day-to-day practice where not all patients get a CT scan. So we cannot be sure that patient didn't have a rib fracture in the sternal fracture or no fracture group. However, 14 patients were excluded during the follow-up because they were diagnosed with rib fracture on the subsequent chest x-rays. That might have increased the sensitivity.
Okay, we're going to move on to question number two, and this is about small numbers of patients. You only had a small number of patients in your study that had sternal fractures. The actual number was 32. And even a smaller number had delayed hemothorax diagnosed within 14 days. That was 4 patients. These small numbers can limit the precision of your results.
Yes, and absolutely. These small numbers will limit the precision of our result. Isolated sternal fracture was a rare finding, and delayed hemothorax was even rarer. We would have need bigger cohort and longer time of recruitment to increase these numbers.
Let me jump in here, Chris and Ken. Nonetheless, you say sternal fracture are often looked for in the eMERGE, but they're not often diagnosed. So it is probably one of the largest cohort. It will have take years and years to get a bigger numbers. It's a first step, I think, of future in looking at this issue of sternal fracture.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is quite a large study when it comes to sternal fractures. The next question, question number 3, is about baseline function. So you used a validated scale to assess functional status. However, you did not have a baseline level for comparison. Pre-injury functional status is known to be important in assessing post-injury status. So why wasn't this data collected?
This decision was made for practical reason. I totally agree that it would have been better to have these baseline levels. Although the SF12 is a norm-based tool that compare function to a normal population using age and ethnicity, it is best to have pre and post level of function, but still somewhat meaningful when we compare to control population data. The initial data collection was made by the treating physician, and the decision to minimize the information that they were collecting initially was made to facilitate the recruitment and minimize the time that these clinicians would spend for our data collection.
Well, the fourth question we had was about outcomes and delayed hemothorax. One of the aims of your study was the incidence of the delayed hemothorax, but there were other complications observed in follow-up. This included pneumothorax and pneumonia. None were seen in the sternal fracture group. Can you comment on why you focused in on hemothorax?
We've made this decision because one of our collaborators identified delayed hemothorax as a significant risk factor for a poorer functional outcome in another study, along with the number of broken ribs. So we were wondering if delayed complication could impact the functional outcomes. That's why we focus our interest on the one that seemed the most relevant.
And let's talk about statistical versus clinical significance. There were some statistical differences identified in your study. However, none of the 4 patients with sternal fractures who developed a hemothorax required drainage. So how important is this finding?
That's another very good question. We don't have the answer to date. The incidence of delayed hemothorax in the old cohort was similar to the one reported in other studies looking at delayed complication of minor thoracic injuries. Therefore, we think our finding might not be so clinically relevant, but further studies will be needed for sure to definitely answer this question.
To help a bit Samuel here, we took a pragmatic approach in the study as during the follow-up, drainage was left to the attending emergency physician or surgeon consultant. So they're on their discretion and with maybe the patient-centered approach, many factors may have influenced the decision whether or not to have drainage. Compared to Europe, we usually drain less hemothorax in North America.
The fifth and final category of questions we wanted to ask you about was follow-up. So loss to follow-up. Your follow-up for delayed hemothorax was really good at 92%. The 30-day follow-up for functional outcome was not bad, 83%, with only a small difference between the two groups. However, the 90-day follow-up was poor, 70%, with a big difference between the two groups. Only 50% of the sternal fracture patients followed up, compared to 80% of the other groups.
Yes, this limits the scope of our result for sure. However, patients lost to follow-up had similar baseline characteristics to those with fully available data. potentially limiting the impact of these losses on the results.
With regards to the length of follow-up for delayed hemothorax, do you think 2 weeks was long enough to identify all the patients with a delayed hemothorax? You did include one patient in the fractured rib group that had a hemothorax detected beyond 14 days.
We think clinically significant complication would have presented within 14 days. This cutoff was based on a previous study on minor thoracic traumas where they found that all delayed hemothorax associated with rib fracture were detected within 14 days. And regarding the patient with a hemothorax detected after 14 days, this was a patient that was kept for analysis because he didn't show up at the 14 days follow-up visit, but he showed up at 21 days instead. So the decision was made to keep his data for analysis because he didn't have data for the 14 days follow-up visit. Otherwise, he would have been excluded.
And we also wanted to ask you about the length of follow-up for functional outcomes. You say in the discussion of previous research that it's established that pain persists for a mean time of almost 11 weeks. So why did you not evaluate functional outcomes beyond the 90 days in your study?
Well, this decision was simply made for practical reason, to make the follow-up easier and minimize the loss to follow-up.
Well, there you go, Samuel. Those were the five nerdy questions we had. Is there anything else you would like to say before we move on?
No, I have nothing to add. I really think you guys get it right with your question and analysis.
Well, thank you. Well, now we're going to move on and comment about your conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
We agree with the author's conclusion about the incidence of delayed hemothorax in patients with isolated sternal fractures that are discharged home. We are less confident about their conclusions about disability.
How about a bottom line, Chris?
The bottom line is patients discharged home with isolated sternal fractures have a risk of delayed hemothorax. These are painful injuries and patients should be provided with adequate analgesia and follow-up.
So can you give us a case resolution, Chris?
Yeah, your patient is discharged from the emergency department with adequate pain control, warned about when to return, and expectations are set on how long he might expect to have pain.
So how are you going to apply this new paper that's hot off the press from CGEM?
Well, we don't have to fear the sternal fracture so much, and we should be sure to inform patients with sternal fractures of reasons to return to the ED and adequately manage pain for these patients.
So how are you going to translate this for the patient? What are you going to tell them?
I'd say about 1 in 8 patients with sternal fracture will develop bleeding in the chest in the next 2 weeks. If you develop increasing shortness of breath, chest pain, fever, or are otherwise concerned, please come back to the emergency department immediately. You can take acetaminophen and or an anti-inflammatory for the pain. I will also give you a prescription for an opiate pain medication to be used only if needed. You can expect to have some pain and difficulty with physical function for weeks or even months.
Hello, SGEMers. This is Brent Toma here from Canadiem.org and the social media team at CGEM. Now, it is your turn to have a say. What do you think about this SGEM Hop episode? What questions do you have for Dr. Racine about sternal fractures? Join the conversation on Twitter using the SGEM Hop hashtag, on the SGEM Facebook page, or on SGEM.com. The best social media feedback will be published in CGEM.
Well, that sound reminds me that it's time to announce the Keener Contest winner from the last episode. Chip Lang, an EM physician assistant practicing in rural Missouri, won. Chip has his own FOMED project called Total EM. He knew the first practical biomarker used for diagnosing acute myocardial infarction was SGOT, and that is now called aspartate aminotransferase, or AST. Chris, what's the question this week?
The first mention of chest tubes for trauma was in the 1200s when a knight used a tube of bark from a branch of a linden tree to treat a tension hemopneumothorax in another knight who sustained an injury during a joust.
Ooh, do you know the name of this knight? It was mentioned on a previous episode of the SGEM on chest tubes. Send your answer to thesgem@gmail.com, and the first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Just a quick conference update. I'm going to be at ASAP in Las Vegas, October 16th to 19th, and the teaching course in New York City, November 14th to 16th. It's great to be doing another SGM Hop with you, Chris.
A pleasure as always, Ken.
Samuel and Marcel, I want to thank you for coming on the SGM to help us understand your paper better and cut that knowledge translation window down from over 10 years to less than 1 year.
Thanks for having us. It was a real pleasure. Merci beaucoup pour cette invitation, messieurs.
Merci, Chris and Ken.
Samuel, as the guest skeptic, you get to give the SGM tagline.
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.